stories, Hamas condemns a recent security pact signed between Morocco and Israel, calling the agreement a great sin against the Palestinian cause. Countries around the world impose restrictions on travel from South Africa after the discovery of a highly infectious new variant of COVID-19 there. The police in Burkina Faso fire tear gas to disperse protesters calling for the resignation of President Rochmark Christian Kabore. Welcome to the program. Our top story, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas calls on Morocco to sever ties with Israel after Rabat signed a security deal with the regime. Hamas has condemned the agreement as a great sin against the Palestinian cause. It says the move is against the strategic goals of the Arab world and cannot be justified under any pretexts. On Wednesday, Morocco and Israel signed an agreement for security, intelligence, and military cooperation between the two sides. The agreement was signed during a visit by the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, to the North African country. Morocco normalized ties with the Israeli regime last year under a U.S. broker deal. Political commentator Paul Larudi says the normalization between some Arab countries and Israel is a poor short-term strategy aimed at only limited and immediate gains.
It's basically these nations looking out for themselves. At least they think that they're looking out for themselves. In actual fact, by giving up on the Palestinians and on the states that continue to support the Palestinians, they're dividing the Arab world in which they live and the region of the world where they do. And they're giving powers to the imperialist nations from outside that want to destroy these nations and to put, you know, nations against nations such as Hezbollah in Lebanon and Syria and Iraq and Iran, and Yemen. This is a means of splitting and destroying and consuming the resources of countries of the so-called Middle East or West Asia and North Africa. And this is a very poor strategy. It's a very short-term strategy for limited and immediate gains.
The decision by Britain to ban the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, as well as Australia's blacklisting of Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah, has drawn condemnations. The two groups have slammed the moves and vowed to continue to fight against the Israeli regime's crimes and violations.
A plot to silence anti-Israel resistance groups. This is what many describe the latest move by Australia and the UK to blacklist Lebanese and Palestinian resistance movements. Canberra announced this decision on Wednesday.
Today I'm announcing my intention to list the base and the entirety of Hezbollah as terrorist organisations under the criminal code. Now, listing these organisations sends a very strong message that Australia condemns the use of terrorism to achieve political, ideological or religious objectives.
In 2003, Australia blacklisted Hezbollah's military wing, but Wednesday's decision expanded the list to include the group's political wing, which is a powerful player in Lebanon's politics with seats in parliament and cabinet. On November 19, the British government did the same with the political wing of Hamas, joining the United States, Canada and the European Union in fully banning the group.
And today, I have laid an order in the United Kingdom Parliament to amend Schedule 2 of the Terrorism Act 2000 to proscribe Hamas in its entirety, including its political wing.
The decisions have been slammed by resistance groups, with Hamas calling Britain's move unlawful.
The decision is a crime against the Palestinian people and against its historical struggle. This is a condemnation of our right to defend ourselves. It is a political and ethical mistake and unlawful by Britain, added to its first crime, when they had the Balfour Declaration. This step is to satisfy the occupation.
Hezbollah has also denounced Australia's move, Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah says the decision to blacklist the group will not affect its resolve and determination.
Putting the name of Hezbollah into the list of terrorist organizations may be due to regional developments or parliamentary election. However, such designations will not affect the determination of the resistance, nor the support for it.
Both Hezbollah and Hamas have been fighting against the Israeli regime's occupation of their lands for decades. Hezbollah was established following the 1982 Israeli invasion and occupation of southern Lebanon. The movement drove out Israeli forces from Lebanon in May 2000, though Tel Aviv still occupies parts of Lebanon. Hamas also plays a significant role in defending Palestinian rights against frequent Israeli aggressions. The U.S. has already blacklisted both groups to appease the Israeli regime, which was created and nourished by Washington and its Western allies. Australia, the U.S., and Britain are now in a trilateral security pact and are not the only main suppliers of weapons to Israel, but regularly vote against anti-Israeli resolutions at the U.N. Their latest moves have exposed their intentions even further, as they have chosen to support the aggressors at the expense of the victims.
Dubbed a variant of concern by the World Health Organization, the latest COVID-19 mutation called Omicron is potentially more contagious than previous variants of the disease. Now countries are scrambling to take precautionary measures amid mounting fears that the new strain is pushing its way across the globe.
South African airports have become a scene of stranded passengers with cancelled flights as the world races to contain the new concerning COVID-19 variant called Omicron. While inconvenient in nature, the bans have drawn mixed reactions from people most affected by the restrictions.
I'm not happy with the situation because I booked my flight on time. Everything was on time. Now I'm inconvenienced because I had to be at work tomorrow, but then they cancelled the flight. After cancelling the flight, if I arrive in the UK, because I'm quarantining in Frankfurt, if I arrive in the UK after 4 p.m., I have to quarantine in a hotel on my cost for 10 days. I don't have the money. I don't have the £2,000 to quarantine in the hotel.
Meanwhile, South Africa, enraged by the restrictions, says it is being punished for being the first country to detect and report the strain, which the World Health Organization has termed a variant of concern.
Based upon the information that we have, particularly from South Africa, they have advised WHO that this variant should be classified as a variant of concern.
Following the discovery, several countries have not only imposed restrictions, but also locked their first cases of the Omicron variant. The British government on Saturday announced new precautionary measures after two Omicron cases were detected in the country.
We will require all contacts of those who test positive with a suspected case of Omicron to self-isolate for 10 days, regardless of your vaccination status. We will also go further in asking all of you to help contain the spread of this variant by tightening up the rules on face coverings in shops and on public transport.
Elsewhere in Europe, Germany reported two cases of the Omicron variant in the state of Bavaria. In Italy, officials registered the first case of the new strain in a traveler from Mozambique. The Czech Republic and the Netherlands have each also reported one suspected case of the new strain. Meanwhile, Hungary says it will impose restrictions on travelers from 7 African countries. This comes while EU member states had already agreed to impose restrictions on all travel from South Africa. Iran halted travel from African countries including South Africa, Mozambique, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Lesotho, and Eswatini until further notice. Several other countries, including Australia, the U.S., Brazil, and Guatemala, have either forced several travel restrictions already or are set to impose such bans this week. While scientists are still learning about the variant, the news has already taken a toll on the global economy amid fears of what the new travel bans would do to the economy still reeling from its falls in 2019. Since its emergence, COVID-19, which has claimed over 5,190,000 lives out of nearly 261 million cases, has gone through several mutations. But considering the human body's ability to fight new strains of the virus and the immunity provided by vaccines, officials across the globe continue to push for jabs in the world's fight against the pandemic.
In Burkina Faso, a child and two journalists are injured after anti-riot police fired tear gas to disperse an anti-government protest.
Give me the fire, give me the energy,
Protesters rallied in Ouagadougou city to express frustration at the government's failure to stop militant violence in the country. They demanded President Rochemark Christian Kabore to step down. The rally was held despite a ban on gatherings and amid a heavy presence of security forces. Angry protesters burnt tires in several neighborhoods in an effort to block police movement. Burkina Faso is one of the world's poorest countries, and its armed forces are ill-equipped to tackle highly mobile militants. Anti-France sentiment is running high in West Africa. Protesters in western Niger block a French military convoy crossing the border from Burkina Faso. French soldiers and Nigerian military police fired warning shots to disperse the protesters who tried to pillage and seize trucks in the border city of Tara. Authorities there say at least two protesters were killed and over a dozen injured, most likely by gunshots. Convoy has now managed to continue on its way toward the capital, Niamey. On Friday, armored vehicles and logistics trucks crossed the border into Niger after being blocked in Burkina Faso for a week. France intervened in Mali in 2013 to fight against militants. People in West Africa believe French forces have failed to stop mounting violence by militants there. Russia has once again rejected Western accusations that it is planning to invade neighboring Ukraine. We discussed that issue at length with our guests in our news review program.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Russia has once again rejected Western accusations that it is planning to invade neighboring Ukraine. Head of Russia's Foreign Intelligence Agency says he needs to reassure everyone that nothing like this is going to happen. Sergei Naryshkin said the suggestion that Moscow may be poised to launch an attack is malicious U.S. propaganda. The remarks came a day after the U.S. State Department's top diplomat for European affairs said all options are on the table in how to respond to Russia's troop buildup along its border with Ukraine. Karen Donfried also said NATO will decide on the next move after consultations next week. U.S. and its Western allies have accused Moscow of preparing an invasion plan. Russia, however, says it is free to move its soldiers throughout its territory and has instead condemned NATO for its provocative acts. Joining us now for the program is Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol, and Robert Fantina, author and journalist, joining us from Kitchener, Ontario. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. I guess I will start there in Bristol with you, Tony. Hope you're safe and doing well. Your initial thoughts on the story.
Well, interesting. Sergei Naryshkin from the Foreign Intelligence Service. It's interesting to see the way that the Russians... They realise that this is nonsense that the West is talking about a Russian invasion. And shall I tell you how we know that in the West, people who are switched on? That's because the Western media has been coming up with this story ever since about 1948, 1949. So we're talking now about something like 70 years. We've been being told there's a threat from Russia. The Russia's about to invade. Well, of course, the total opposite is what's taken place. And the NATO forces have actually been moving closer and closer to the borders of Russia and threatening Russia. So the opposite has been taking place as to what they're now saying. Now, of course, when there are potential, maybe with Russian intelligence gets information that the West is going to try some sort of a provocation on the border, it would make sense for them to move their troops. But the idea that the Russians are about to invade us, I'm afraid, these people who are saying this are living in fairyland. This is not going to happen. I can categorically say there will be no invasion from Russia. And what may happen, though, is that we may see some sort of provocation going on from and by the West. The Russians are, I think, very... a measured nation. There's an Orthodox nation, which actually makes it different to the European Catholic and Protestant type attitudes, and that I think they're very reliable, basically. We've seen the West threatening Russia, and it is a form of Russophobia, actually. It's a kind of mental illness there seems to be in the West.
Thank you, Tony. Robert, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Hope you're doing well out there in Kitchener, Ontario. Now, Robert, it's funny because you see a NATO and its buildup getting closer and closer to Russia's borders, multiple countries. You see them flocking into the Black Sea like it's their backyard, yet they're pointing the finger at Russia. It's Moscow that's getting ready to invade and not them.
Yes, this is typical U.S. propaganda. The U.S. is always pointing the finger at someone else before it's ready to invade. The United States is positioning its troops in nearly 1,000 foreign military bases on borders of many countries, almost surrounding Iran, as a matter of fact. So this new accusation is just the typical U.S. policy of having some enemy, something to take away from the attention of the problems of the United States. We have to remember President Biden is, his poll numbers are very low. There's talk that the Republicans will take control of the House and Senate next year. And a war is something that, for whatever reason, U.S. citizenry always rallies around. So if the United States can either threaten a war or actually have one, that is politically beneficial for the party in power. Now, as Moscow's foreign intelligence chief mentioned, Russia has the right to position its troops anywhere it wants to within its own country. The United States positions its troops anywhere it wants to within the world. This is a criminal activity, but to accuse Moscow of planning an invasion of Ukraine because it has moved troops somewhere near the border, when the United States has troops near the borders of countless countries around the world, is simply typical U.S. hypocrisy. We see it continually in U.S. foreign policy.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both for joining us once again. Tony Gosling joining us there out of Bristol, and Robert Fantina, author and journalist, joining us from Kitchener, Ontario. That's a wrap for this segment of your News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The onus is now on the international community to force Tel Aviv into dismantling its apartheid regime. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written jointly by Ramzi Barut and Romana Rubeo, journalists. This article is titled, Raids, Arrests, and Death Threats, Israeli Regime's Strategy of Silencing Human Rights Defenders. Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. In December 2019, and after years of haggling, the ICC resolved that there is a reasonable basis to proceed with an investigation into the situation in Palestine, pursuant to Article 53 of the Rome Statute. Despite intense Israeli regime and Western pressure, the last hurdle in the way of the investigation was removed last February, as the ICC has finally approved the prosecutor's request to open legal proceedings regarding war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories, including Gaza. This legal milestone was cemented by major declarations, one made by Israel's own rights group, B'Tselem, in January, and another by HRW in April, both slamming the Israeli regime policies in Palestine, not just the occupied territories, as apartheid. This critical change in the international legal position regarding the Zionist regime's new unflattening status was boosted by Israel's own violent actions in East Al-Quds, Gaza, and throughout Palestine in May. Unlike previous wars, the May events have shifted sympathy mostly towards Palestinians who are fighting for their freedom, homes, and other basic human rights. The change was also notable within the U.S. government itself, which is unprecedented by any account. An increasing number of U.S. lawmakers are now openly critical of the regime of Israel due to a radical change in the U.S. public opinion. And again, unprecedentedly, they are not paying a heavy price for it, as was often the case in the past, due to the great influence of the Zionist lobby in Washington. The shift is dramatic, it's tectonic, reporters on May 21st quoted U.S. pollster John Zogby as saying. In particular, younger generations are considerably more sympathetic to Palestinians, and that age gap has been on full display with the Democratic Party. The Zionist regime's losses are not just sentimental or political, but economic as well. Last July, the international ice cream giant Ben & Jerry's decided to stop selling its products in illegal Jewish settlements while pinpointedly condemning the Israeli regime occupation, a move that was described by Amnesty International as legitimate and necessary. A few months later, the sports clothing manufacturer Nike followed suit, announcing that it will end the sale of its products in Israeli stores starting on May 2nd, 2022. Although it did not justify its decision based on political reasoning. While the Zionist regime continues to lash out at its critics, it no longer seems to behave according to a centralized strategy. Lacking a strong leadership after the dethroning of former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and formation of a diverse unity regime, the new Israeli regime does not seem capable of holding back international criticism of its conduct in occupied Palestine. The notion that everything that the Israeli regime does is justifiable as a form of self-defense is simply no longer a strong selling point. The May War is a perfect example of this assertion. In the case of the banned NGOs, for example, aside from sending a representative from the Israeli regime intelligence agency, Shin Bet, and another from Israeli regime foreign ministry to Washington on October 25th, with relevant intelligence to justify its decision, Tel Aviv continued to carry out the same policies that further exposes its apartheid in the eyes of the international community. Indeed, on October 27th, the Israeli regime announced the construction of thousands of new housing units in illegal Jewish settlements in its first such move during the presidency of Joe Biden. A perfect illustration of the frantic nature of the Israeli regime response came on October 29th, when the Israeli regime envoy to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, during his speech at the General Assembly, tore into pieces a report issued by the Human Rights Council illustrating Israeli regime ongoing violations of international law. Erdogan said the Human Rights Council attacked and condemned Israeli 95 resolutions compared to 142 resolutions against the rest of the world. He ranted, "This distorted and one-sided report's place is in the dustbin of anti-Semitism." We may be at the cusp of a fundamental change in terms of the Israeli regime's relationship with the international community, while Tel Aviv continues to heavily invest in its apartheid infrastructure, the international community is slowly but clearly becoming aware that the Israeli regime's apartheid status is a permanent one. The successive statements by B'Tselem, HRW, the joint HRW-Amnesty statement condemning the de facto outlawing of the Palestinian NGOs, and again the ICC investigation, are all indicative of this growing awareness. The question remains, will the fake regime of Israel be able to use its power, influence, and leverage in Western societies to force the world to accept and coexist with a full-fledged apartheid regime in Palestine? And if yes, then for how long? A critical mass of support for Palestinian rights is being constructed around the world thanks to the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, that is BDS movement, and hundreds of pro-Palestine civil society groups all around the globe. For years, the fake regime of Israel seemed keen on countering the influence of Palestine solidarity around the world using a centralized strategy. Large sums of money were dedicated or pledged towards that end, and a partly government-controlled company was even established in 2017 to guide the Israeli regime global campaign. Much of this has amounted to very little, however, as BDS continues to grow and the conversation on Palestine and the Zionist regime is gradually changing from that of a political conflict into the recognition of Israeli regime racism, apartheid, and utter disregard of international law. Of course, it will take more time, more decided effort, and certainly more sacrifices on the part of Palestinians and their supporters to expose Israeli regime apartheid to the rest of the world. Now that the fake regime of Israel seems to have accepted that there is little it can do to reverse this brand, it is accelerating its colonial efforts while hunkering down for a long fight ahead. The onus is now on the international community to force the Israeli regime into dismantling its apartheid regime. Though it is ultimately the people who liberate themselves, the international solidarity is essential to the process of national liberation.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and let us ponder upon a beautiful statement from the Commander of the Faithful and Leader of the Pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Beware of the flight of blessings, for nothing that runs away is returned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, you're welcome to your program For a Better Life. I'm Javed Akbari, and in this session we are going to speak about morality in life. Of course, Islam praises and lauds good manners very strongly and very clearly, of course. It is important to understand why good manners is strongly lauded by Islam. Having good manners transcends a lot more than just a few words, but it is a strong foundation for those who wish to build good character as they grow older. The virtues of good manners are seen in various ahadith and various sayings which have been transmitted by generations of scholars to us. And these traditions are these sayings of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and those of his noble successors point to good character that is pleasing to God and his messenger. The Holy Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him and his family, has reminded us that the most beloved of Allah's servants to Allah are those with the best manners. Of course, this is a famous hadith which has been reported in both Shia and Sunni sources. Now, this quite well indicates that morality is the best thing a person can have. It exceeds in terms of value, in terms of superiority, any other thing in life. Now, having good manners when socializing with other people, when interacting with other people, isn't just an important factor. Of course, when dealing with people in this temporary abode, it's not the only important factor, but even more so, it is part and parcel of pleasing God in His majesty. If you want to please Allah, you have to be a man or a woman of good character. So, because that is the thing that counts a lot, that is highly significant. We need to develop good habits in our life, and we need to make conscious and deliberate efforts to create good habits and to develop good manners in our life. Good habits are formed by continual repetition of certain acts which actually lead to certain disposition. And man is a free agent. He is able to change his life by making conscious efforts or by putting himself in an environment which shapes his character and his personality. Let's have a short break, dear brothers and sisters.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Man cannot escape the influence of the environment, whether that environment is positive or whether it is destructive. It does not matter. It will have an impact on your individual, on your personality, and on your life, whether you want it or not. But what is actually important is that we need to develop good habits in our life, because there is a saying from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, who said, "Ma yudha'u fi mizani imra'in yawm al-qiyamati afdalu min husn al-khulq." Nothing is weightier, nothing is heavier on the scale of deeds than one's good manners. So good manners are so important, and good manners therefore are an important realm in building a character of a true Muslim, one who continuously wishes to follow the Holy Prophet of Islam for the sake of God, one who wishes to emulate Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, for the sake of Allah. Now, Islam indeed prioritizes akhlaq above all aspects of life, as I said. Akhlaq is such a thing that without which a person who is, in fact, a social being cannot live in the society without proper akhlaq, good habits. It is almost impossible for an individual to live a life of dignity, to associate with other people, to interact with other people. You know, man as a social being, he has to interact with other people. He has to have a give and take relationship with other people. So the concept of akhlaq actually centers around the faith of oneness of Allah. Spiritual values need to first be inculcated in oneself in order for those values to be rendered into practice to achieve the height of human development. Now, the height of human development is something that is no limit to it, and there's no limit to being good. There's no restriction whatsoever to being a perfect individual. Perfection is something that is not achieved overnight. It is achieved with the passage of time. The Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, was well-mannered in his speech and his manners. And of course, there are different reports, there are different traditions and hadiths that have been reported and transmitted from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. The Prophet of Islam was the best role model in everybody's life, and he is the best role model, because the hadith from the Prophet, peace be upon him, says that innama bu'ithtu li utammima makarim al-akhlaq. Of course, I have been commissioned and I have been sent forth to perfect the morals. Now, the Prophet of Islam was never obscene, never coarse. Rather, he used to tell us that he was the best among us, and he was the best among those with the best manners, of course. He was the perfect, the most perfect role model.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Even amongst the youth, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, was very respectful. He never spoke down to the youngsters around him, even if they asked a lot of questions or made mistakes, like many youngsters often do. Instead, he would treat them like adults, appreciate their hard work and ideas, and gently advise if he felt advice was needed. He would give his advice whenever it was necessary. Now, there is a reporter. The reporter's name is Anas Ibn Malik, and of course, he is a well-known reporter. He has reported that he said, "I served the Prophet of Allah for 10 years. During that time, he never once said to me as much as oof. If I did something wrong, he never asked me if I had failed to do something. He never asked me if I had failed to do something. Why did you not do it? Or why did you do that? And he never said to me if I had done something wrong. Why did you do it?" We obviously understand the importance of good manners, and it's not always easy, especially when having to deal with all sorts of people in today's world, to maintain good manners, but it is possible. It's not impossible. Good manners obviously encompass a wide range of social etiquette, from speaking to groups of people and from speaking in public to avoiding backbiting or fault finding, and to speak pleasantly to others but to avoid, you know, excessive flattery, and so on and so forth. These are all included in good manners. Of course, since we are running out of time, I would suffice with this hadith from the Holy Prophet. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud reported that the Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, and his family said, "If they are three people, two of them should not carry on a conversation from which the third is excluded, for surely that will be distressing to him, because if one person is left out and two persons are speaking among themselves, then that person who is excluded will feel hurt." So inshallah, we will continue our discussion in the following episode. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert that he knows, every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows, every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows, every thought I have and every word I share.
Now helping us teaching aids in some Korean kindergartens. The pint-sized machines do everything they can, from singing to reciting stories. The robots, being as tall as nearly 25 centimeters, can also dance, have sing songs, and even teach kung fu moves. That gives children fun as they mimic the robots' push-ups and one-legged balances. It's also good for the kids' creativity. In fact, that's the purpose of sending the robots to hundreds of kindergartens in Seoul, beginning from August. Each robot has a camera and its helmet, making it possible to take photos and send them to a tablet for viewing. Teachers say they love their new ways.
The robots are helpful when at times it's hard for me to read everyone's stories. The robots can read out stories in a very entertaining way by switching voices accordingly.
For now, the robots are being used as part of a pilot program, but Korean education officials hope to use them more widely, although they say the machines would not replace teachers. The officials believe having this experience in nursery schools will have a lasting effect throughout the kids' youth and as adults.
Spacecraft are used for a range of purposes, from observation to exploration and navigation. But this specific spacecraft was designed for a totally different purpose, to smash into an asteroid. In a first-of-its-kind mission, NASA launched the vehicle, Dot, from a Space Force base in California. The mission will take 10 months to travel to a pair of asteroids. It will eventually crash into one of two rocks and see if it can change its course. just before impact, DART will deploy a small satellite to take photos of the crash. Space organizations around the world are eager to find ways of countering objects that might head towards the Earth. The good news, though, is that for now, none of those objects are a threat. And old manuscripts are precious and can sometimes fetch attractive sums of money. But this one has gone far beyond, as it's a really rare handwriting belonging to a world-famous scientist. This manuscript was sold for a whopping $13 million at an auction at Christie's in Paris. But would you still be surprised if we told you that it belongs to no one but the great physicist of our time, Albert Einstein? Einstein did not have a habit of keeping drafts, and this is one of only two manuscripts that have survived. Einstein wrote the 54-page document in the early 1900s in Zurich, Switzerland, and his colleague Michel Besseau has preserved it since then. The document contains Einstein's preparatory work for his signature achievement, the theory of general relativity. Einstein's letters have set records twice before, but for much lower prices. November is the best time of the year to see polar bears moving around Canadian shores. During this month, the carnivores gather in large numbers and wait for the waters to freeze before they begin their seal hunt. These bears are playing and wrestling in the Canadian city of Churchill, dubbed the polar bear capital of the world. The area is located within a natural habitat of a large population of polar bears. Sometimes the city's residents even share their streets with these animals. Currently, there are nearly 25,000 polar bears in the wild, and Canada is home to more than 17,000 of them. However, wildlife organizations say these animals are facing the threat of extinction by the end of the century due to global warming. Robots in a war-ravaged city. Androids serve clients in a restaurant in Mosul, an Iraqi city that still bears the scars of the years-long presence of terrorist groups. This fully digital eatery offers a futuristic experience to its customers. From interactive tables to glowing constellations, everything seems like a journey to the future. But the robot waiters are the stars of the show, and the major reason the restaurant attracts a large number of visitors every night.
The idea started during the COVID lockdown. As you know, people spent most of their time on social media during that period, since commuting was not allowed. So we tried to look at different ideas from around the world, and thank God we were able to execute this idea and complete this project.
The owner of the eatery says he has imported the robots, but other technologies used there are the work of a group of young engineers from the University of Mosul. The venue has already become very popular, and many visitors call it their favorite place in the city. Qatar displays a dazzling drone show as it unveils the countdown clock for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Doha. The clock in the shape of an hourglass is located at Doha's iconic Cornish fishing spot. The distinctive design enables the structure to be seen from any angle and stand out from the spectacular city skyline behind it. The event reveals to fans worldwide that just 1 year to go to the big kickoff. Famous athletes including David Beckham and Samuel Eto'o were in attendance at the ceremony. They may not realize it, but they are extremely lucky if two pandas have been adopted by superstars. Chinese Olympic champion Zhang Jieqi and Paris Saint-Germain footballer Kylian Mbappe have become godparents to a pair of panda cubs. The athletes have both expressed satisfaction with their new role, with Mbappe calling his godparenthood a big moment. The cute cubs are only 3 months old and can barely stand on their own feet. They are called Yuan Dudu and Huan Lili. Space lovers have been treated to an epic lunar eclipse that dazzled the night skies of the Northern Hemisphere. The event is also known as the Blood Moon because of the red haze seen around the moon during the eclipse. The 3.5-hour phenomenon gave stargazers the chance to witness the longest partial eclipse in 580 years. Although NASA calls this celestial event a partial eclipse, around 97% of the moon was cast into a red hue by the Earth's shadow. A total eclipse could also be seen in Russia's far eastern regions. The next longest partial eclipse will take place in around 648 years.
An 11-month-old baby has become an internet sensation after a video of her snowboarding went viral in China. Wang Yuji is a daredevil infant snowboarder whose adorable face sticks out underneath all the protective snow and sports gear. Her parents decided to learn skiing during the winter, but they also wanted to include their baby on the fun of snow sports. While snowboarding might be a bit too early for a toddler who can barely stand or walk, Yuji was not scared at all and even enjoyed it. China, which is hosting the Winter Olympics in a couple of months, is encouraging citizens to try ice and snow sports.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
Every year, the roads across this tiny island in northwestern Australia turn scarlet just as millions of crabs leave their homes in the depths of the forest and start marching together all the way to the ocean where they can mate and spawn. The spectacular group voyage on Christmas Island happens after the first rainfall in October or November. And in order to give these red creatures the leeway, locals close off multiple roads across the island. They've even built a special bridge for the crabs so that they can cross the road unharmed. The mesmerizing migration is now a tourist attraction, drawing nature lovers from around the globe.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago.
A new study shows that moderate consumption of tea and coffee may be better for your health than previously thought. The study conducted by a Chinese medical university says tea and coffee can help keep stroke and dementia at bay. And if you're wondering what is meant by moderate consumption, it's defined as something between 2 and 5 cups of tea and coffee, either alone or combined in one day. The study followed more than 360,000 people aged 50 to 74 for over a decade. Some scientists have praised the study as robust. Others, however, say the participants were all selected from the UK Biobank, which means they're healthier than the general population. Pomegranate has a special place in Iranian culture. There is a trace of the fruit everywhere from poetry to cooking. Iranians even hold a pomegranate festival in the fall. This year the event is held in one of the main parks in the capital, Tehran. The festival features different varieties of pomegranates that are grown across Iran. The visitors can also find pomegranate products, including juices, concentrates, and dressings. The event includes cultural parades, music concerts, and traditional live performances. Iranians say they always welcome the pomegranate season, as it's one of the old symbols in the country's literature and art. The Christmas season always brings happiness and joy to people around the world. Many Parisians these days are taking a respite from their daily routines and hitting famous departmental stores now light up with present boxes. Cheerful families could be spotted at Christmas-decorated galleries, Lafayette and Printemps department stores. Automated figures and colorful window displays are the center of attractions for them and their children. It's a season when people buy Christmas gifts for their loved ones, and stores make big profits this time around. Many Parisians say they want to take advantage of this period as the government is debating whether or not to impose a COVID-related lockdown. In Venezuela, a large number of musicians are striving for one common goal, and that's setting the Guinness record as the world's largest orchestra. Over 12,000 musicians, mostly children and adolescents, have played together to make that happen. Hundreds of violins, violas, and double basses playing in unison at this setting in Caracas. The musicians are all connected to the country's network of youth orchestras. For them to set a record, over 8,000 instruments had to play at the same time during a 5-minute period of a classical piece. Right now, a Russian orchestra that played the country's national anthem is holding the record. Once done, the crowd of musicians erupted in cheers, lifting their instruments and waving Venezuelan flags. Guinness will announce its decision in the next 10 days. Tourists and residents in Los Angeles have been mesmerized by a dazzling new event the U.S. city is hosting with holiday-themed and a full of colorful lights. Visitors can enjoy a mile-long walkway covered on all sides with brightly lit installations. Artists from around the world have taken part in the exhibition. The centerpiece display is a cathedral tunnel lit with thousands of bulbs. Another amazing attraction is the orbs, lit up with thousands of torches. The event has been a huge hit with the LA public.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
And it gets to be out in the open, and it's like a perfect night to do it, so it's great.
It's definitely the best. Like, we had to do, like, in a car to go see lights, and then we got to, like, now, like, go around and actually walk and get to see everything up close, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Definitely after the, what, year and a half that we've had.
Yeah. So. And it's really nice to see everything up close, because it's, like, you see in a photo, but